My name is Julius, and I'm an alcoholic. God, that should nerve wracking. There's so many people here. My sobriety date is January 18, 2013. I have a sponsor guy named Phil. I have two home groups. I don't remember the first one, but that's my home group. It's a Monday night over at this church in Redondo Beach or Torrance, whichever one you want to call it. I go there every Monday, and then Thursday nights. I don't know the other one either, but I go there consistently as well. Don't care about the names too much. Just show up. I did want to get a couple of things off my chest before we get started. First off, thank the person who's where's you who asked me to speak right here. Okay, I want to thank you, whoever was texting me and stuff like that. It's I actually owe them an amends because I like it's weird about these motives because he asked me to speak, and I don't like speaking. It's my least favorite thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, yeah. And so like what I'll never usually say no to an AA request if I could make it happen, but like for some reason I was just like, this ain't it, you know? It's gonna be a no for me, dog. But I was like, if I tell my sponsor this, he's going to be like, what the hell are you doing, dog? So I was like, instead, I'm going to kick the can down the way and hopefully they'll forget. Yeah. And I like to thank you for holding me accountable. All right. So I'm wrong. My bad. But thank you. All right. And next, I just want to say I have a lot of hot takes. I'm sure many of you do as well. But if you hear nothing else from what I say, or if you don't like anything else, know this: Alcoholics Anonymous works. It has saved my life. There's three things I'll tell you if you're new: get a sponsor, work the steps, and do something. Make something about make everything a better. Make everything about. What you I used to have this saying. I can't remember it. Make someone else more important than what you got going on. There it is. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so there's that being said. Okay, now let's get to the nitty-gritty. So I was born.
Yeah.
Shout out to all my Leos. And I was born in Loma Linda, and I was raised in Michigan. I heard someone was a Michigander. Anybody from Michigan here? Yo, what's up? What's up? And I liked how you were describing like where you were in comparison to Detroit, because I'm from Pontiac, Michigan. Okay, and I was raised there. And so how I would explain that is I'm about 35 minutes northeast of Detroit. And I have a mother who I still think is crazy, but I love her dearly. And she had six kids, you know, and I was the second youngest son. And like, man, she did the best she could, raised the six kids all by herself, you know. But at the time, I didn't think she was particularly the best parent. And by that I mean, like, the best way I could explain it is my relationship with my mother was like Stewie and Lois earlier in the seasons of Family Guy, like me actively wanting to kill my mother, you know, because she was the sole inhabitant of all my true progress, right? And like, dude, I don't know like why particularly, but like I just knew that there's something was wrong, you know. And like I would go to school and like people would say, you're really intelligent, except for if you would really apply yourself, you know. And I'm like, oh, I'm so smart, and that means I don't know how, you know, like just a lot of that minutia. I was always afraid of my fellows, you know. I couldn't fit in, you know. I used to wear these, this isn't what makes me alcoholic, but I just want to set the stage for you. So I used to wear these leg braces because I have a hereditary like nervous disorder where my muscles could possibly be deformed and I end up crippled. And it's fortunately I was it skipped a generation, but I would wear these leg braces around and I'd get roasted, bro. I would get roasted, dude. They called me RoboCop. It was crazy. It was crazy. You know, and so I was uncomfortable in my own skin, man. I wasn't accepted by my fellows, and Pontiac is the hood, and we got a little glow up to go out to Waterford, Michigan. I'm sure she knows where that is generally, and it was a really nice school, and it was like mostly white folks, and like the hood was mostly black folks, and I was too white. I was too white talking to fit in with the black folks, but I was too black to fill in with white folks, and I was just uncomfortable in my own skin. Bottom line, that's the stage. And so, like when I came across alcohol, my first time drinking, I was 14 years old, and my older brother, who seemed like the coolest dude like ever, like 6'5", like football star, wide receiver in high school, like everybody wanted to be him, all that stuff. And I was not that, you know? And he was on the bus and we were on our way to school and he like pulled out this fifth of Captain Morgan's rum. And I was like, oh man, little caveat, my mom is sober and was sober at that time. And so she was like, no drinking. Alcoholism is a genetic disorder, whatever, you know? And like, you should stay away from it like the plague, right? And I'm like, shut up, bitch, you know? Because, you know, that's how I felt, right? I would never tell her that. That'd be a death sentence, you know? All right. And so he was like, yo, man, like, you want a shot? And I'm like, oh, man, like, I don't wanna deal with the hassle of dealing with that. You know, just say no to drugs. And but the moment he said, you don't, he's like, you better not be a little bitch. I was like, yo, I ain't no bitch, cuz. And yeah, I took the shot of Captain Morgan's rum at 14, and I was like, oh, it went down pretty hard, but like it hit me, it hit different, you know? It was like suddenly I had a spiritual awakening as a result of like taking that first shot, you know? I could stand in my fellows and like truly tell them what I really thought, you know? And I could like use my intelligence that all these counselors and teachers told me that I was real smart and tell people what's up, you know? It felt good, you know? It wasn't readily available in the house. So I had to like sneak out of house and go to parties like we do, you know? It wasn't anything crazy until, you know, I like, fast forward through high school, graduate there, and I need to get away from my mom because, you know, and I decide to go to college, and you know, I was gonna be free from the bondage of my mother. That was the plan, and it was on and popping, dude. I'm in college, you know, I'm a grown ass man, you know, and I start partying, right? And like we do, it's normal. And like I'll tell you, like. It went from like this is fun to like I needed it and wanted it real fucking quick. Like it's funny that people talk about like when your head speaks louder than the booze, because like I was like running from the ideas that like my thoughts were true, and that was the only thought, that was the only reality that I had. And then I dulled that with a drink and I became awesome. But then it started to like catch up with me where like I had to drink more to dull my head, right? And it just wasn't working anymore. It didn't matter how many like kegs and keg stands and banana costumes, you know, or how like all that stuff, you know, I became a frat boy and like the party wasn't doing it for me at a point in time, you know? It didn't matter how many parties. And so like I like there was this one time where like there was one frat boy party where we're like doing keg stands and stuff, and like I would go upstairs and I smelled something funny in the hallway, and I'm like, what's that? What's that, bro? And like every now and again, some of the frat boys like would just disappear, you know, and you won't see them for a while, and they come out and they smell funny, right? And I'm like, okay, let me see what this is about. And so I go in and they smoking weed, they popping pills, they're snorting shit all across these dirty ass 1864 tables, and whatever. And so I was like, this is what I've been looking for, like the booze ain't doing it for me, and so I got to get with that, that's where the cool kids at too, and I fancy myself to be cool, right? And so I went on and popping with that until the frat boys was like, we can't have you like snorting shit and smoking weed in the house, so you got to get the fuck out. And so fortunately one of our other frat brothers had like a hookup just where his dad bought him a house. And so we started really listening to Gucci Mane back in 2006, bro. You know what I'm saying, dude? That trap started going hard, huh? And so yeah, we fancied ourselves to be drug dealers, right? And we got our rule number one of being a drug dealer. What's rule number one of drug dealing? I failed at the start, right? I failed at the start, right? Fuck, man. And even that started to not be enough. Then I started getting the paranoia, like my friends are out to get me, like they hate me, they don't want me here, and just the anxiety reading, it was constantly like an internal battle, and it didn't matter how much safer just completely blacking out or time, what do they call it, time traveling with Xanax, Yeah, man. That's how we get down, dog. And so ultimately, it didn't matter how much internally was going on, like the drugs weren't enough. And you would think I would go seek help, right? But no, this is my only reality, right? I get a little run into the law. I would like get a little job at this restaurant and in a pretty affluent part of town in Michigan. And I'm selling drugs to the restaurant owners and shit like that. And I get pulled over on one night at like midnight. And like the guy who I was with, he had like warrants out for his arrest. And I've never had a run-in with the law, I would talk a big game, because like Gucci Mane, right? We dodging 5-0 and all that. The feds watching us, bro, And I was not, let's clarify this. I was not about that life. Okay. I never was. I talked a big game. And so the cops pulled me over, and immediately when that happened, I just went like, oh, the drug's right here, dude. You're like, oh, I'm going to tell you. Like, I'm sorry, here, arrest, I'm like, okay, and so they arrest me and put me in, they put me in what you call it, a holding cell, and they pulled my other guy aside, and they like, okay, I want my phone call or some shit like that. And then they take me out of the holding cell, and then they walk me over to the offices, and they say, yo, if you tell us who your supplier is, then we'll drop all the charges, let you go tonight. And I was like, I ain't no snitch. Pretending to be tough. And he's like, all right then. So that was like me going into the system, and so come back and I'm like gloating, we made bail, and I'm gloating to my boys, like I ain't snitched on you guys. What's up, dog? I'm hard now, and I'm not really that hard. And I continue to, live my lifestyle, because there's nothing wrong. I'm not internally it didn't matter how much booze it was. I had to keep going, at this point I crossed that invisible line that some people like to tell us, I needed it. I needed it. And so fuck all the court shit, but I still had to show up because at first I missed my first court appointment. And so I like called them and said, okay, I'm gonna come in, turn myself in and do all that stuff and do the arraignment. And my mom comes to pick me up. And it's funny because whenever I'm in trouble, my mom's around, you know, and I hated her, right? But she's always freaking there. Like, what's up with that? And she's like, okay, we're gonna get you some food. We're gonna go to Big Boy or something. We're gonna feel you nice. And I was like, why are you feeling me nice? You never buy me food for anything right now. I didn't know what was coming. So I didn't know what was coming. And then so I pull up to the court. Oh, and I'm like high as balls, like completely out of this world. And I show up to court like dressed in like this nice suit and stuff, and like I'm trying to be presentable and shit like that. And like she's like, why were you not at your last arraignment? And I was like, well, I and then she threw me in jail like immediately. And so like when I'm in jail, like I was like, my mom, like that's why my mom fucking fed me, because she knew I was gonna get locked up. And I was like, okay, so what the fuck am I gonna do? I have no way of knowing how long I'm gonna be in this jail for. And so I start crying. And like straight up, I'm like, I've never done. See, I'm a drug dealer. I'm a tough guy. I'm hard as shit, right? But here I am on this bunk bed with all these real tough guys. I'm just bawling, bro. You know? And not like I couldn't believe it. Like, how did I get here? You know? And so I was only in there for like 7 days. I tried calling my mom, but she wouldn't fucking answer. She didn't want to take on the charges or anything like that. And so I get out and like, what do I do when I get out? Who wants to guess the answer? Who wants to guess it? You do? Yeah, exactly. To no surprise. All right. And so I go get loaded again, continue to do what I'm doing, right? To the point where like I start justifying in my head, because I get like these jams things where I have to call in the morning and you randomly drug test and blow, right? And I would say, okay, I still need to like live the lifestyle I need to live, right? And I need this. This is the only reality I know, you know? And like what I'll do is I'll only drink to midnight, you know? I'll only drink to midnight, and then I'll chill the fuck out, and then I'll go randomly drug test, and I'll bring a bag of pee or whatever, you know? And midnight always turns to one, and one turns to two, and two turns to four, and four, like I'm putting mustard packets down my throat, you know, because I heard it on a Ludacris song, you know. And like just the insanity, dude. Like if I could put it down, I would, right? You know, so I have to like continue because there's no other way, right? And so ultimately I got hemmed up, and like they sat me down, had me blow again, and then they're like, okay, you're clearly fucked up, bro. And we're gonna have to tell the probation officer. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm on the run. But I didn't go anywhere. I just went back to the frat house, right? And I mean, they weren't really looking for me, like, you know. And I continued to do that, you know, until like I decided, okay, you know what, I'm gonna change my life around. I'm gonna go handle this case. I'm gonna do whatever it is I gotta do. I got this job right here, and like they're looking to promote me. And so like I'm gonna be honest with them, and I'm gonna go do this stuff. And so I did that. I went back to you know, showed up in front of the judge. He's like, all right, well, we're gonna give you one more shot, but we're gonna put you in jail for 10 days. And I was like, but after that, you're gonna go back on probation and you're gonna finish out your year, right? And I was like, okay, chill. I'll run that. I'll run that. And I go in there, do my thing, you know. I'm like trying to get different types of come ups from the people in jail, you know, like, cause I'm gonna use that shit when I get out there, and I won't get caught, right? Meanwhile, all the people in jail are caught for a reason. I fancy myself really intelligent, you know? And so I get out, and this firm resolution, bro, you know, I have a plan, bro. I'm gonna execute. But, you know, there I am lit up again, you know? And there I am violating probation, you know? And there I am like hurting my mom, my friends, my family, you know. I'm the type of drunk that'll steal your booze and help you look for it, you know. I'm the type that like will steal all your shit and then like complain that the world's wrong, and then I'll try to go to a pawn shop, you know, all the things that we do, right? And so like I'm like sitting here violating probation again, and like I'm like, how did I get here? Like everything, that my whole reality, my whole lifestyle, it is like screwing me, but like I'm none the wiser. And so what do tough guys do? We call my moms, right? And I'm like, yo, moms, like I can't get right, like it's always a problem. I keep on violating probation. I can't get out of the system, right? You gotta help me. And she's like, well, you go need some, you need to go to rehab. And I was like, okay, I'll try it out, like I'll go into rehab for a little bit. And then I went into rehab and like I was like a chameleon, bro. I was like sounding real fucking good about how the like these panels will come in and like, yo, you really need to get this stuff and I'm gonna get this stuff and like sound real good, man. Like to the point where I'm like I'm starting to believe my own lies, And like I get out there and I'm off and running again, still with warrants out for my arrest. And like I did like two rehabs back to back, and then I went to a sober living in the same city I was in, and then I ended up going back, like literally walked to the frat house and got loaded that same day. I said, And so ultimately I decided my mom, the timing was impeccable because like I violated probation again and I called my mom again and she's like, well, I'm moving to Atlanta. You can run it with me, right? And I was like, okay. And she's like, 'cause all this court stuff is like isn't gonna get solved until you get sober. She's sober, right? And so like, I mean, she knows that I'm beyond human aid, but she's trying to help the best way she can, right? And so we moved to Atlanta and like I'm a dry drunk, like I'm sitting there living at my mom's house and I haven't dealt with any of my resentments over my mom. Like she's the fucking problem. She's the fucking problem. She's been trying to help me every step of the way, but she's the fucking problem. And she tells me to go to this NA group and like she actually gets me a sponsor there and I like it tells me to call them and like she hooks it up, right? She hooks me up to a lifeline, right? But I'm like, yeah, that ain't it. That ain't it. That ain't the move. What I really need to do is go to community college, and go to the gym, and really excel, and really excel at this job because like I'm not suffering from untreated alcoholism. No. So I mean, I was called this sponsor guy when it was convenient for me, I would do the step work when I wasn't playing PlayStation 2 and Skyrim. Shout out to all my gamers. And so, like, it was only a matter of time before I was going to get loaded. And one weekend when my mom decided to go back to Michigan, like, went out with, to the bar with a couple of my coworkers, and it was on. And then I got the great idea that I was going to tell my mom how she was going to run her life. Like a little bit shortly after that, because she was some doing some stuff that I didn't find very like accommodating to me. If you want to know about that, we can talk after the meeting. But ultimately, like she's like, well, I can't help you anymore. You got to get the fuck out. And I was like, oh shit, this is real. I'm in a place where I don't know. I'm in Atlanta and like I have none of my connects. I have none of my things. I'm out on the street. And then to like add the cigarette to the fucking skin, she was like, hey, you wanna use my phone so you can call you a shelter? And I was like, fuck, this is real, real, And so I'm out on the porch and I'm like sitting there like, man, I was gonna be like I imagined all the things that I was aspiring to be when I was younger, and like when I was like I was going to be a backstage dancer for Justin Timberlake, like when I went to college, I was going to be a philosopher. I was a philosophy major. Any philosophy majors up in here? I had these like really all day right here. My guys, I was hanging out with. Water seeks its own level, right there. I had all these firm resolutions, but like I'm here, And at this point, I was like, I've literally fucked up my life and I see no solution. In the book, it talks about making the supreme sacrifice rather than continuing to fight, And I was like, you know what? Suicide sounds like a good idea right now. And at that moment, there was that. And then right after that, I was like, hey, maybe you should use that phone. You should use that phone. And I didn't think this thought would normally come, like it just came in my head. Like it was almost magical, because that's not my logic. My logic is I'm gonna make another like dead end decision that's gonna end me up back in this serious cycle. But this call was to my sister. My sister was like, okay, I could either bring you back to Michigan, or I could send you to your uncle in California. And I was like, huh, well, if I go back to Michigan, I'm probably gonna get up in the law. And if I had known that my uncle was sober at the time, I probably wouldn't have went to California. But I chose the California route, right? And there was those if we talk about these series of circumstances that like we couldn't possibly contrive, you know? Like it was that moment of clarity that like and it, that thought I still don't believe it was of me, you know? And I get on this great, I stay the night at this like random Momo, you know, and then the next day I get, she buys me a bus ticket on a Greyhound, and I will travel 3 days on that Greyhound, get loaded on that Greyhound, and then end in Long Beach, where my sobriety begins. So there's a little thing that happens there is because like I got loaded on that bus, but I didn't want my uncle to know that I got loaded on that bus. And I really didn't want anyone else to know that I got loaded on that bus. So, like, I started, like, I would say my sobriety was like this amount of time, and it was a lot less. And I would carry that on through, like, probably about a year and a half of my sobriety. And so I get off the bus, and my uncle's there, and he's like, yo, if you get loaded, like, you don't have anywhere else to go. You know, you're out in the street in California, same situation as Atlanta. And I was like, okay, so I guess I need to look sober long enough, you know, because like I remember one of my dreams and aspirations was to be a pot farmer in California. As you can see, I'm a dreamer. I have many different dreams. And so like I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to look sober, you know. So if you're new, it doesn't matter like what reason you have for coming here. You know, we're just glad you're here. Yeah. And so came in here to look sober enough. So I did like the court card shuffle without the court card shuffle. I would check the box, made it to a meeting, check the box, made it to the meeting. One time they asked me to speak at 6 months, which I had like what I think it was a little bit more than 6 months, but I was lying about my time, remember? And so I'd go up there and like sound real fucking good. Like, hey man, the 12 steps work, it saved my life internally. I feel so spiritually good, you know, lying through my fucking teeth, you know. I'm dying on the inside, you know. And a little bit after that, like this like at one of the meetings I was like checking the box at, this freaking guy, how much time do I have left? 15. Okay, good. I'm getting sober. I'm getting into it. All right. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm hearing this loud black guy, and like I have trauma from like loud black people from my mom. And like, and like I'm sitting there like hearing this guy, and I'm like, God, man, this guy is annoying as fuck. And like I knew about you AA people because I like my mom's sober, so like I'm just gonna do my own thing. I still got my plans, right? So I'm not listening to this guy at all. And there's a break, right? And so like during the break, like I'm freaking like other side of the parking lot. All you newcomers, yeah, I'm talking to you guys. When y'all go out to the other side of the parking lot, we know what you're doing. You know, like we know what you're doing. And like I'm avoiding everybody because I don't want what you have, right? And like I was like smoking my cigarette. I'm like, I'm trying to set another stage for you. I have like my white beater on. I have like some jogging pants with paint on it. And I have my Nike slides. I still wear Nike slides. And like I'm like minding my damn business, avoiding everybody, right? And this guy who was like well liked about the group because I've been here a couple times, and like everybody like, hey, what's up, dude? What's going on, man? And he's like hip slick and cool. He's got his hair slicked to the side, look like kind of like Johnny Bravo. And like I'm like sitting there looking, and then I noticed that he notices me. Like we lock eyes, and I'm like, oh. No, 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 no. He like all the people are like calling for him outside the like the little corridor and stuff, and he sees me and he runs straight over there to me. Out of everybody he could have talked to, he came straight to me, right? I'm like, what the hell you want? Like, you know? And he's like, hey, where you from, bro? What's up? What's up? And this guy's from Long Beach. He's like a retired gang member, and he's a white guy, so I don't know how that translates, but like and so I'm like, what the fuck is you, dude? And like it's so weird because he made AA sound like a carnival, dude, where you smoke each other's cigarettes, you drink each other's coffee, and like talk about feelings, right? You know? And I'm like, I want nothing more than to hold you guys hostage for 45 minutes and like tell you this sob cervical story about how the world was freaking wrong. You know, how like if you were in my position, you would drink too. You know, how like there's no hope for me, bro. Like, and he's like sitting there smiling and listening and like, yeah, man. It made it sound like he was really like catching on that like like there is a hopeless situation. Like they're like, you're fucked, bro. You know, I'm like, what can I say, dude? And that's what I wanted to hear. But like he was like, hey, you wanna try doing Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was like, well, I don't really got much else going on. You know, I was gonna go back play San Andreas on my PS2, but whatever. And he was like, okay, well, are you willing to go to any lengths of victory over alcohol? And I'm like, sure. You know? And man, it was that moment, dude. It was that freaking moment. He asked me to like go in the dictionary and define self and define honesty. And he gave me his number. And he said, come back to me and write about it. Like write about like you being honest with yourself. And so I told him, like, when I brought back the step work, is like self is this, honesty is this, and I need to like go back to school, I need to get a car, I need to do all these three-dimensional things, right? And he said, so what do you think is the most honest thing you could do for yourself right now? After I told him that, I'm like, is you dumb? Like, I need to do all these things because these things are what's gonna do right. You know, I need to, you know, pull myself up by my bootstraps and live the American dream, bro. You know? And he's like, hey, bro, like the most honest thing you could do for yourself right now is stay sober. And I was like, the fuck? I'm like, all right, I guess so. He's like, and I'm gonna show you how to do that, right? I was conned into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was tricked against my will. You know, I didn't know what's best for me, and I needed to be robbed from myself. You know, as I stated previously, like I was clinging to my own reality, my thoughts, my designs, and they never worked. But like, dude, I have to like double down. I have to every time because like that's all I know, right? And so someone had to pull me out, you know? And so I'm still lying about my sobriety date. I follow these instructions. He's like, okay, you got to be ready at this time. Someone's going to pick you up and take you to the meeting. And I'm like, all right, I guess. And then we're going to do step work before the meeting. We're going to eat, and then we're going to go to the meeting. And we do that every single day. And you're going to call these alcoholics every single day. And you're going to pray every day. I don't care. Like, I don't care what you got going on, these other things you're going to do. And so I did those things, right? And what I was always told is when you do the 12 steps, the 12 steps works on you, you know? And so everything, like slowly, like everything that I had going on, all those like logical things that because I thought I was really intelligent, the steps started poking holes in. Like you're wrong. You know, you're freaking wrong. And then he's like, you gotta be honest with yourself about this stuff. So I had to start getting honest. Because like I felt internally sick as a result of like lying over and over and like constantly getting the same result, you know? And like, man, dude, that transformation like that happened for me was like so profound because like I like that. As soon as I like got honest about the stuff that I was lying about, about the fake sobriety day, about the stuff that I would never tell my sponsor, about the fact that I have alcoholism, and I needed to be in here. The moment that I, dude, there was freedom connected to it, it like it, the world opened up to me, so suddenly like possibly thinking about killing myself wasn't a bright idea, and like from there on, dude, like in this group, in this specific home group, they like took me in and then showed me the way, dude, because I did not know D way. Anyone get memes? Thank you. Hey, I had to do that one. I had to do one cringe thing, okay? Give me one. All right. All right. And so and like Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, my first couple years, like old habits die hard. I became one of those bleeding deacons. I got through the steps and like very, I was a very militant type of sponsor. Like I was like, dude, you're gonna like they would tell me all these things and I'm like, ha, you're gonna get drunk and die and then just walk away. Yeah, I was that guy, dude. I was freaking that guy. Oh man. And like and then they'd turn like they'd come up and ask me later for sponsorship. It was weird. It was a weird time, dude. And like I learned like how to be useful instead of useless, there was this time where we not only will we make meetings every day, what I fancied myself doing like on a Saturday night is I would go to Red Gate in Long Beach, if anyone knows Red Gate. No one knows Red Gate here. Okay, cool. It's like just your run-of-the-mill rehab. They have a Monday night meeting there where the rehabbies would come in, and then like the sober member of AA would come in, and we'd just have like a leader in a meeting. And it was amazing because like that's where I got my sponsees, and that's where I would do the thing. And on Saturday night we would hit that panel. One of my sponsor had a panel there, and we would also take other people's panels hostage. So we would do that every Saturday night, like literally just like show up randomly to someone's panel time and like, hi, we're here for the panel. And it's not like that's what we would do. And that was exciting for me. Like that entire transition is like, yeah, we gonna go help some fools, whether these panelists like it or not. And yeah, man, I was about that life, and so like from there, like I learned how to help people, and then like I like gravitated to service, there's different, hey, if you're new or if you're struggling or if you're like struggling to find a sponsee, I swear up and down there's more than one way to do 12-step work. And that's like H and I get with H and I got one of those Red Gate panels, and I still continue to like take people, other people's panels hostage. And then I like st started gravitating to general service. If you want to go and argue 45 minutes about healthy snacks at the meeting, at a 6-hour meeting, general service is your place. No, I'm joking. What I found to be really effective with general service was that it was the type of service work that like the newcomer would never see, like going up there, like I was the coffee commitment guy, and I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive to Hesperia, to get the coffee ready. And they'd sit in there and they have these round tables about like getting pamphlets to Alaska, about getting like big books, to or like starting a new GSO in a different country, bringing Alcoholics Anonymous where like Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't exist or isn't allowed or is taboo, it was super rewarding, my experience in general service. And then one of my favorite things, and I like been doing this type of service for 11 years, is WIPAW. I love young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're young or young at heart, I like swear up and down on like getting involved with young peoples. I served at the Harbor Area in South Bay, and it taught me how to like do the general service stuff. It taught me how to do H&I and stuff. It taught me to feel belonging because I got sober young, I could have fun in sobriety. I could stay up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning at some hotel at this Icky Paw or Acky Paw and like be excited about sobriety, and like they teach you all these different things. Thank you. And I've found so much joy in making someone else more important than what I got going on. I know I said that earlier, but this is the reason why. It's like I can sit here for 45 minutes and then tell you how like my life is wrecked and you couldn't possibly understand, and so I'm gonna drink myself into oblivion to like, yo, I'm useful, I'm helpful, I have a life today, I have friends today, I have Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you. Thanks.